Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how imaginative are you? Do you have a great imagination? Do you love to play in it? Or not? Well, let's talk about how our minds work and how we can expand our minds to play more imaginatively in this world. And to help us do that is an author who I've had on the show a number of times before. He's one of my most favorite guests because he brings so much to us all the time. And that's Robert Moss, and now the author of Growing Big Dreams, Manifesting Your Heart's Desires Through 12 Secrets of the Imagination. Robert, welcome to Energy Stew.
Always a pleasure to be dreaming a world with you, Peter.
Thank you. And you and I go back a long way, and I've actually attended a shamanistic workshop with you in New York that really was, in many ways, life-enhancing for me. And I am so grateful to you for what you bring to all of us all the time with all of your books and the whole idea about imagination and dreaming. And we're not just talking about dreaming in the middle of the night. We're talking about living in, as you say in your book, dreams are the primary dimension of being. And that's something that is so important for us to understand, that life is always just an illusion. We are creating life through our consciousness. And how much do we want to limit it or expand it? And to me, you're the magician to help us expand the illusion that life offers us, that we offer life to.
Beautifully put. You know, the last chapter of this book is titled, "The Stronger the Imagination, the Less Imaginary the Results." This is something we need to understand. I mean, everything we inhabit, everything we experience is generated by perception and imagination, and they're deeply intertwined. You know, we give form to the world around us. What we see is what we get, but we don't all see the same thing. What we do see is conditioned by what we are prepared to see. You know, the business about the primary dimension of being is fundamental. I mean, in mystical and shamanic traditions, it is understood, whether it's Kabbalah, whether it's, you know, the vision of the Sufis, whether it's the vision of the Neoplatonists, whether it's the vision of shamanic lineages that I know, their vision is that what is generated in physical reality begins somewhere else. It begins in a fundamental dimension of being beyond the physical plane, but no less real, maybe more real. When I was studying the Iroquoian tradition, the traditions of the nations of the Longhouse in northern New York and Canada, because of my dreams had sent me there, I heard from an elder who just said quite matter-of-factly at one point, "Robert, the dream world is the real world. This world, the physical world, is the shadow world or the surface world." And there you have, in a sense, from a primal understanding, which was maybe shared by all our ancestors, you know, the idea that what happens in the world around us is a dream or an illusion, which might be less real, not more real, than what happens in a dream world beyond this one. So my approach to life is this, Peter. I mean, I'm a simple, practical guy. I may not sound like it. But when I step out into the street, and I can't travel as much as I used to in these pandemic times, I'm prepared to receive everything the world gives me as a sign, a symbol, or a message, as part of the dreamlike play of the world around me. And I'm prepared to see how I can shift or shunt the reality around me through the use of my imagination, and how I can do that by changing my attitude. I mean, we are magnetic. It's one of the tricks of life to recognize, not in the simplistic New Age sense, that the law of attraction is real. We attract or repel things according to the images, the thoughts and feelings we are carrying. Focus on that. Adjust your thoughts and feelings and images and see what the world gives you. But beyond that, I teach people, and every night and every day, quite often, I do it myself. I teach people to go to places in real worlds of imagination where you can meet wise teachers. You can go to schools of higher learning. You can go to places of initiation. You can go to places of healing. You go to pleasure palaces. You can do this anytime. And, you know, this is great knowledge to have. under the shutdown, lockdown circumstances of the pandemic. Because not only can we travel in our dreams, the dreams we don't ask for and may not necessarily want, but we can set ourselves up. We can program ourselves. Okay, tonight I'm going to Paris, or tonight I'm going to go to the scholar city of Anamnesis, where I can go to a school of higher education and I can continue my study with wise teachers. Or I'm going to go to the astral realm of the moon and see what's going on there tonight and see whether I can bring back a new song or a new creation.
But the difference is that you know that, and most people don't. And the fact is that most people are conditioned not to believe in their multidimensionality, not to even understand that they have one, that life is mostly left brain and is conditioned in ways that are very self-limiting. And you take it to wonderful levels of exploration that most people don't even think that way. So that's why it's so important for your teaching and your books to be out there.
Well, let me make a few comments about that. First of all, to satisfy the left brain skeptic, I will say to people, okay, read up on what quantum physicists are telling you about reality now, because quantum physics is basically saying the universe, the fundamental reality, is more like a dream than like anything else. I think John Wheeler was the one who said that most clearly as a quantum physicist. You want to understand reality, understand it is basically a dream. This is the fundament, not atoms and particles. It's a dream. It's all about consciousness and the dance of consciousness. Understand what physics is telling us about the shape of reality itself. Understand the observer effect, which everyone has heard about, the idea that observing something brings something into manifestation out of a quantum soup of possibilities. Then apply it to yourself. Maybe where you put your mind, maybe where you set your dream, maybe what you let allow to happen in your dream in the night or your dream in the day is choosing an event track out of a limitless realm of possibilities. And then, Peter, people are changing. I mean, we've been at home so much this year, and people are desperate for sources and resources and for entertainment and regeneration and refreshment. People are waking up to the fact that dreaming is a very cool thing to do. I mean, for a start, in the night, in your night dreams, let alone anything else, you can travel without leaving home. I mean, that's pretty cool. You can have socialize without worrying about social distancing. I mean, that's pretty cool. And you might have access to sources of wisdom and knowledge and power and insight for life beyond the ordinary. And my goodness, don't we all need that? Look at where we've gotten ourselves as a species on the planet. We need different tools and resources. But, you know, my access to all of this goes back to early childhood, because I had the fortune or misfortune of dying a lot as a kid. I was pronounced clinically dead at the age 3 and again at age 9. I guess I had a hard time staying in the body in this world. But there's a gift in a wound, which is a lesson we need to remember in these hard times. We're all suffering one way or another. There's a gift in every wound. Look for it. The gift in my wound as a sickly kid who kept dying was I became very familiar with realms of dreaming and imagination, which the very outdoorsy Australian society around me didn't necessarily pause to look at. Although the first peoples, the Aborigines, thought a lot about this. They're the first people to confirm my dreaming. So I've known since my early childhood that there are realms beyond the physical. They're also real. I've known things like we can have contact with the ancestors, we have contact with our departed, it can be mutually helpful and healing. But maybe above all, we have realms of possibility and discovery and adventure and learning in non-ordinary reality, and we can go there intentionally, and we can bring back gifts.
Right, and it is a gift, and many, many people now have near-death experiences and have a chance to see the other side. And when they come back, they're very different because they know that this isn't all there is. And so we have dreams. Everybody dreams. Most people remember dreams. And we can understand that our dreams are telling us something that we should take note of and use and start living more for the language and the motives of our dreams.
Well, thank you for putting it that way. I mean, I'm not sure until this year that I was confident that most people even accepted that they were dreaming. Well, they would accept that they're dreaming, but they don't remember their dreams. You've noticed, as I have, there's been a pandemic of a psychological kind in our culture, which is that people have been bereft of dreams. They don't remember dreams. They have not had a working connection with dreams of the night and haven't understood that dreaming is a way of being in the world in the larger sense that you invite us to consider. That's changing. It's changing very fast. I notice that people everywhere are more ready to share their dreams, to talk about them. They want guidance. They want to know that there's a safe way to discuss this stuff, and they want to apply it in some way that supports their life. So that is changing. More people are getting in touch with dreaming, and that is a very good thing, because dreaming puts us in touch with, as I say, with wiser sources of the ordinary mind. Dreaming can be the voice of conscience, which is why I deeply distrust anyone who purports to lead humans who doesn't tap into their dreams or their inner self, because they're shutting out the voice of conscience. They're shutting out the possibility of course correction and of restoring the inner compass, which is part of what dreams give us. When I think about dreaming across the whole spectrum, I think this, Peter. Dreaming is not fundamentally about what happens during sleep. I have great respect for sleep dreams, spontaneous sleep dreams. I might not want them. I might not have asked for them, but they show me things it's useful for me to see. Great respect for that. But dreaming, you know, might also be what happens in a lucid state. It might be what happens when you're between sleep and awake in the middle of the night. It might be what happens in a shamanic journey or a certain kind of meditation. It might be the way that you look at the world around you and your eyes open and your senses grow and you realize that this is all a waking dream. But when I look at the many varieties of dreaming and what is actually going on in dreams, I think about three broad categories of experience, three modes of dreaming. This is very simplistic, but I'd like to offer it for now to get the conversation going even further. First of all, we have rather literalistic, realistic experiences in dreaming, whether it's in sleep or in other ways. We see things that are happening at a distance, for example. You know, we see someone at a distance. We're in Paris at a restaurant. We see what might happen on Tuesday, what might happen next year. So precognition, telepathy, clairvoyance, these are functions of this literalistic mode of dreaming, and it's worth paying attention to. A purely psychological approach misses this. The indigenous ancient shamanic approach does not. The ancient shamanic approach is, hey, dreams are about survival. They're part of your inner radar. They show you things that are happening at a distance in space or time that you need to know about. So there's that kind of dream. It doesn't require interpretation. It often requires clarification and application. Then there's a vast field of symbolic dreams, and I'm a symbolist about everything. So I'm never going to trivialize the importance of the symbolic dream that takes you from what you think you know to what you don't know yet. And in this great category, one of the things I love to think about is all of us seems to have a personal film production crew working behind the curtains of this world in the night or in the afternoon if we're napping, making dream productions for us, making movies that will educate us, shock us, entertain us, take us somewhere beyond what we already know.
It's amazing, the amazing detail. Yes. That they present us in our dreams and they just show up.
Absolutely. So one of my own little exercises for self-entertainment, really, when I'm in the twilight zone, particularly between sleep and awake in bed, is, okay, I want to go to my dream cinema right now. You know, let's see what's playing. Let me see if I can get past the ticket lady,
I love that.
Who's sometimes fierce. And then I'm in the velvet plush seat. It's all good. And then the movie comes on someday. It doesn't always come on. But when the movie comes on, I can actually step through the screen and become the star, the scriptwriter, the director. That's a great exercise in conscious dreaming. But just on the main lines, I'm talking about three modes of dreaming. The third mode is for me the most interesting, Peter, and it's this. It goes back to your opening thought. The third mode is that dreaming might be an experience of another reality altogether, another order of reality, of other realms, of the imaginal realm, the realms of true imagination, where scholars and mystics and shamans have always and creators have always wanted to go. It might be an experience in the realm where the dead are living, which is quite easy to access in dreaming. And I'll tell you this, I have no theology about any of this, but you become an active dreamer, you'll cease to have any doubt, in my opinion, in my experience, that consciousness survives the death of the physical body. And that might be a useful thing to know. It might give you some courage and clarity for your current choices. It might give you a sense of divine comedy about the ups and downs of life. I mean, that's my experience. So one of the realms you can travel to, one of the separate or other realities is the afterlife, I mean, which is vast. The geography is much bigger than this world. You might go to other planets. You might go to parallel lives, parallel worlds, where you, Peter, and I, Robert, are not talking right now because we're both doing something different, near or far. We made different choices. I never came to the United States. I never left my first wife. I never changed my job, etc. Well, in dreams, we're sometimes finding ourselves in those parallel event tracks, which physics again tells us is more likely than not. Physics talks about the idea right now we're living in many worlds or many interactive worlds, many parallel universes. What would that mean to you on a human level? Well, look for your dreams, journal your dreams. Notice that you might be again and again in what seems to be a continuing life situation somewhere other than where you are in regular reality. That's a very interesting study to pursue, and from it can come all sorts of thoughts and conclusions about the nature of reality itself, and also some possibility of reaching into that parallel life and bringing some closure or some gift or some skill from that other Peter or that other Robert who's doing something a bit different right now.
And this sounds, I love the idea of this, and it sounds like an advanced course in consciousness for us, but it is entirely doable. It's just that many of us are working enough in the imagination on this plane. And so I wanted to present another, my point of view that I work with every day is my intuition. And even in my classes, especially where I see it happening in more rapid sequence with so many students, is that I tap into universal knowing about information that there's no way that I would know. And so I'm open and I'm shown things that I had no idea about. Every class, there are a number of times in the class where I'm given information that I've never heard of before. And it's fascinating and very viable, very important for the class to hear. And there are things that, I might do, look at past lives of students, and all of a sudden I'm on another planet in another world and I'm given all the details of how that planet functions and what the beings there, how they relate to each other and how different it is from here. And so this universe is so vast. And if we can open up our consciousness and let the information flow, I'm not as perhaps visual as you are or as present in other worlds as you are, so much as my hearing and my knowing, my conception attracts it and brings it in. And all of a sudden, I am in many different universes, or not universes, but let's say other constellations and other times too, because I can go back to ancient times with people and see their ancient selves and even to future times. Because right. As you say in the book, there is no linear sequence really. We are creating it. Linearity has to do with consciousness so that we can comprehend things.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Einstein told us that, time exists so that, as a convenience, so that we're not confused or overwhelmed by things happening all at once. And that leads me to mention the Einstein dreams I had many years ago. I was amazed that Einstein, or my comic book version of Einstein with his comic German accent, would turn up in my dreams, because I'm a scientific ignoramus. And he basically said, no, Robert, dreaming will be central to the science of the 21st century, and dreaming holds the secret to time travel. And then, because I can't follow scientific formulas, nor could Jung, by the way. Jung had dinner with Einstein, and Jung wrote that he felt he'd fallen through the floor. He couldn't keep up with the physics. So I'm feeling like this in the presence of my dream Einstein. So Einstein says, study the I Ching. The I Ching's the best model, that you can understand of how reality is. So he's talking to me, not talking down to me, but giving me simple models of understanding I can work with. I love that. I'm highly visual. I'm also highly verbal, of course. I'm a writer. I do a lot of drawing and painting, but I wouldn't call myself an artist, except that I love it. But so I get a lot of my information visually or in the form of story. Story is the best code for me. I understand things by story. I teach by story. So, for example, last night, before this interview, I dreamed that I'm with someone I loved and lost long ago. She died far too young. And it's a lovely, warm, affectionate scene. I put my arm around her. I apologize for certain things that went wrong in our relationship. We're on this beautiful sandstone boulder overlooking a calm, private beach. And bang! As soon as I speak like this and put my arm around her shoulder, we are transported to a scene in Paris around the year 1700. We're in the Palais Royal. I know this site as it is today. It was there in 1700. And suddenly I am dressed like a French gentleman of the time, and I have a flintlock pistol in my hand, and in this body I know how to use it. With other similar aristos of the time, we're going to shoot pigeons in the gardens of the Palais Royal, and the woman I've been with is somewhere I'm not sure with. Let me pause. This is a glimpse of my dream life from last night. What's going on here? Well, I'm having a double adventure. I'm with someone who has died, and we are making peace, and we're apologizing. And then, bang, I mean, a scene from an earlier life, earlier time. What's that about? I'll tell you what I think it's about, Peter. Hope this is not going too fast for you, because you're quick. Hope it's not going too fast for people watching or listening. I think I was actually taken into the level of understanding that someone who has died accomplishes when they are enabled to look at the pattern of interconnection between different lives and different times and places. I don't have a linear view of reincarnation. Don't ever saddle me with that. But I do know from my experience, myself and others, we're connected to dramas playing in other times, past, future, and parallel time. I think she wished me back to a scene to understand something she now understands in her condition beyond physical death, which is she's seen a pattern of connection between us and between others involving different life stories she didn't understand when she was in this world. And she wants me to understand it now so that we can grow across the swing doors, the apparent barrier of death, our understanding of the multidimensional self and the multidimensional universe.
What a great gift that was.
This is work in progress. I mean, this is fresh material. I've only just written it down. I'm thinking about it. I recognize some things about it. But there's more here than I can explain to you, because there's more here than I can explain to myself. It's a research assignment. So let me just say this, Peter, very quickly. My dream set me research assignments every day. It might be to research an odd phrase from a language I don't know or only half know. It might be to go to a place on the map of this world that I don't know. And I'm like Jung in that respect. Gerhard Adler, one of his acolytes, reported he was once with Jung telling him a dream about landing in India, making a landing in India. Jung runs to the bookshelf, gets the atlas, didn't have Google, gets the big old atlas and says, opens the map of India, says, show me exactly on the map of India when you landed. I'm like that. I research my dream assignments, and sometimes they're about levels of knowledge in the transit zones and the Bardo areas beyond this world. Sometimes they're about landing in India, or where that odd phrase, in what language was that anyway? You know, Hindi, Catalan, you know, what it gives me. So every day, wherever I am, whether I'm traveling or at home, I have something to do whenever I get up, which is to research, memorialize, record, and draw from my dreams.
Well, we can barely grasp the quantum nature of reality, and we're doing it in snippets like this, like stories and time travel, and ways that our higher consciousness, our greater consciousness, is helping us understand entanglement, that we are all entangled in yes. ways with the past and the future, that's all simultaneous in the opportunities to grow and inform ourselves and learn who we truly are as quantum beings.
Absolutely. Well, very well said, beautifully said. I think, you know, it's a reasonable statement, or at least speculation, that we have access at any given moment to the entire information field, the whole quantum information field.
Universal computer.
You talked about your way of accessing it. I, being simple-minded and liking stories and pictures, have my way of accessing. Give me a story and a picture. Give me something I can work with, you know, that is as tactile.
I love that. I love that too. No, you're so fascinating, because it's much more entertaining to have all the pictures that you have and the environments you see yourself in that allow you to enjoy it so much. I'm a little bit more cerebral in that I look for the lessons and then I try to share them with people and I try to help people and this is like. You talk in the book about sharing dreams with people to help give them dreams. And often I'd like to tell people about some of the magic that's happened in my life that they can expect to happen in theirs. You know, this is the way magic works. And I want people to understand that everybody is a magician. And you're perfect at helping people know that.
Well, I'm glad that you resonate with that part of the book and that part of the practice, and I'm sure you do your own version of it, Peter. I'm sure you do. I mean, I call it dream transfer or vision transfer or story sharing, you know, or word doctoring. I mean, it's like this, I think. We know people who don't have a dream. They don't have a vision of life. They don't have anything to keep them going. They don't have a healing image and they're facing a health challenge. We can do this. We can bring them a dream. We can bring them an image that can live in their body, in their mind, can make them better because the body believes in images. Where do you get that story from? Well, you develop ability. you develop a pharmacy, an inner pharmacy of stories or images, if you're like me, and then you learn to tell them to people and gift them to them and ask their permission to receive them. I have to tell you a quick story. Do we have time for a story?
We have a few minutes left.
All right. Well, let me tell you a story. A wonderful psychotherapist who studied with me from New York City some time ago said, Robert, I've got a guy. He's in Sloan Kettering. He's got cancer. I'd like a healing image I can bring him. So I didn't hand the psychotherapist the image. I helped him to craft and find an image that would work in the mind of the man who was sick in bed with cancer. And it becomes very funny. He said to me before he went over to the hospital, he said, Robert, you know, my friend is very physically oriented, you know, only trusts what can be quantified and tested by the senses. I wish I could bring him a pill, you know, a dream pill, and say, take this pill and you'll have the image that will heal you. So I reached in my pocket, and I don't eat candy generally, but I had some sour lemon drops in my pocket. I said, hey, take him one of these, tell him to put it on his tongue, and as you tell him the story, and as the pill dissolves on his tongue, he's receiving all the healing juice of the story. So the psychotherapist goes over to Sloan Kettering, he gives his friend the story, that the thing dissolved, the guy is screaming with delight, and afterwards he's calling the doctors and nurses, I've got to give you a dream pill. I mean, I've learned a therapy is, in addition to yours, that really works. So it's funny, I mean, that's a humorous story around the edges.
I love that.
By the way, the image worked. You know, the physical support was just part of the game.
Took that suggestion.
It worked.
Right.
We can do that. We can learn to bring a dream to someone who doesn't have a dream, and that can make a heck of a difference.
Well, you bring so much to so many people in your work on every level, every dimension, actually. So we're really coming to the end of the show. So Robert Moss, you have a new book called Growing Big Dreams. You have many other books. How can people connect with you?
Well, I have to hold up the jacket because it's a wonderful jacket. I dreamed what it would look like, and the art director of the publisher gave it this explosion.
Okay, so that's for people who will be able to see the video.
Yeah, that's for people. I'm holding up the book. If you're not seeing it on the screen, see it in your mind. Happy Exploding Colors, and the title, Growing Big Dreams. Well, they can find me at mossdreams.com. That's M-O-S-S, dreams.com. After all these years in America, I still have to spell my name because I don't do the American version of the vowel. Necessarily, mossdreams.com. I teach lots of online courses. I do lots for the Shift Network, online video courses. Maybe you want to check those out. I have lots of books. This is the latest one, but as Peter knows, there are many others. And I want to give everybody, including Peter, a dreamer's wish. May you grow big dreams and live them and tell them so well that they want to take root in your world.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. Robert, thanks so much for being
your dream host, Peter. I love hanging out with you. I always wish we had more time, and I can't say that about every show that I do.
Thank you so much, and I hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Absolutely.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.